at the 2019 AXFI conference in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And who's in the studio lounge? Mr. Patrick Schwertfeger.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry. Schwertfeger.
We got it.
Got it on the third time.
Absolutely.
Got it. And you just gave a great keynote this morning on embracing disruptive innovation. And my, oh my, did you have some very compelling content in there. You had
so much
that audience
happening.
Was riveted to all the things that you were saying.
Yeah,
so,
they stayed. You know, I'm very excited about what I do, and I'm a nerd and a geek, so I love talking about it, and I think that kind of comes across. But it's amazing how many people are nerds and geeks today.
Yeah.
And you have to be, in a sense, because every time you read your app or you watch the news, like, the technology is coming at an accelerating pace.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my biggest message today, was that for many executives, it's really intimidating. It's scary. And I'm not saying that's wrong. It should be scary. But there's also an opportunity, because most people, I do these events all around the world, different industries, different parts of the world. Everyone always says the same thing. We're behind. Whatever industry it is, we're behind.
Are you always
credit unions, we're behind.
Yeah.
Number one, it's not true, because everyone's behind. But what is true is that people are not going as fast as they perceive that they should be going, which means there's an opportunity for anyone who is ready to take that jump,
right,
and really make some investments. And it's, you know, the scary part is you're budgeting failure. Like, you set aside some money, which potentially you could lose.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, Jeff Bezos, I'm a big fan of his, CEO of Amazon, and he said, if you have a 10% chance at 100x return, you would take that bet every day.
Yeah.
It's a mathematical no-brainer.
Right.
You're still gonna fail 90% of the time.
True.
Like, how crazy is that?
Yeah.
And I think about that a lot, because these companies, and even myself as an individual, like, we have to try things knowing that most of them won't work. But when you try something, all of a sudden, the world looks different from here than it does from where you just were, even though it failed. Now you have a new perspective. So your next step is a step you never would have taken from the beginning.
You didn't fail the first time, right?
Yeah.
It's that fail fast, fail forward.
And so you ask yourself, okay, what's the minimum viable experiment to test the concept? Like, just as an example, like, do you need to actually build a product that you want to sell? No, you don't. You can try and market it before you've built it, just to see if there's traction.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And if there's no traction, don't build it.
Yep.
But if there is traction, now you got something to build.
Right.
So, and there's a thousand of these examples, and it's certainly in Silicon Valley, and, you know, that's what they're all about, is how do we iterate quickly?
Mm-hmm.
How do we, you know, like, if you had $1 million to, just as a round number, to invest in technology, don't put that $1 million into one project, put 100,000 into 10 projects. Or you could do one-tenth of that.
Yep.
Put 10,000 in 10 projects. Just enough to see if there's traction, and then you calibrate and pick the winners and keep going. So,
gotcha.
Anyway.
I want to talk about we could be here for like two hours talking about stuff, but we have like 5 or 10 minutes. So one of the things you talked about in the beginning was more leverage in the system, and you're talking about technology being a form of leverage.
Yeah.
So can you expand on that a little bit?
I mean, so there's the leverage.
You said to stay on the right side of leverage.
Yeah, well, so the leverage to me is, of course, there's a thousand different types of leverage, but the two big ones are financial leverage and technology leverage.
Yeah.
And financial leverage is kind of a different animal, and I don't even really address that. But the technology leverage, like, the point is, technology is something that you can leverage, or that someone else can leverage against you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can leverage it against your competition, or your competition can leverage it against you.
Mm-hmm.
Or even a third party can leverage it against both of you, right? So we always have to be aware that this dynamic is playing out, and some people are taking those risks and trying those experiments. I mean, SpaceX is a great example of what they are doing with Starlink.
Yeah.
Where they're trying something. I mean, imagine all the ISPs around the world, right, the internet service providers and even the telecom, the Verizons of the world, like, if they have a global internet coverage with high bandwidth, they could replace the entire thing with VoIP, and
you don't even
need cellular.
No doubt.
Which means cellular goes away.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that's going to happen, but it's those sorts of things. And in business, as business leaders, we have to make sure we're on the right side of that leverage equation. So we have to find a way to put our toe in the water and test it.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to test it big. The smaller the test, the better. But you need to test it and keep staying on the right side, because otherwise someone else is going to sneak up behind and then it becomes scary.
Precisely.
Then with the opportunity that I'm so excited about becomes a death wish.
Right. And the reason why I bring that up is because our industry right now is experiencing that.
Yeah.
Because financial services industry has been, it's been, I don't want to say it's been a staid industry, S-T-A-I-D,
yeah,
industry. So not much has, but things are changing now because of a lot of the fintechs that are nipping at our heels trying to get into
from
the
direction.
Every direction, exactly.
I mean, it's not like it's coming from one side, it's coming from all over.
Right. These fintechs are leveraging their technology against the traditional financial institution, credit unions in this case.
Yeah.
And so I brought that, I thought that was fascinating how you were talking about that. It's like, well, I was thinking in my mind, this is what we're experiencing right now in our industry.
And they're well-financed.
Right.
So it's,
right.
I mean, they're, again, like you can kind of list all the different industries of the world and rank them in terms of the financial opportunity, the financial incentive that's
mm-hmm.
available.
Mm-hmm.
And in financial services insurance, of course, there's tons of money available. So it makes sense mm-hmm. that, so you get these startups, as you say, like a lot of them are becoming unicorns, right? They're worth a billion or more.
Yeah.
So the VCs and the private equity people are dumping money, which means these companies have money to work with.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, the credit unions are almost, they're not sitting ducks, but it's very scary to see. And so it's always like, I always picture, you know, rather than sitting on opposite sides of a table where we're adversaries, how do we sit on the same side of the table mm-hmm. and find a way to partner?
Yeah.
And so when I was talking about like Creologics, for example, which has this platform where like a smaller bank or credit union can use it to provide mobile banking, it's a pretty slick interface.
Yeah.
Now I haven't used it myself, and I'm not an expert on that platform. But these sorts of things, and what's the other one? I forget the other one. There's base load, something.
Yeah, I remember.
But whatever it is, I mean, and they're two of probably a dozen. So,
yeah.
Like, how do we stay on the same side of that equation? And the problem is you give up some of your sovereignty, if you will, because
mm-hmm.
now they've got data as
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just your data anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always a transaction taking place. But the bottom line is you're better off with that platform in today's millennial-driven environment
right.
than you are if you skip it
mm-hmm.
and try and do it yourself. Because to try and build that, I mean, you're talking 100 engineers for 3 years, you know, most likely. Well, I don't know if it's that much, but it's a lot
mm-hmm.
to try and build something like that. You're maybe better off just to use a platform that can help you provide that quicker.
Indeed. And a good technology to leverage that you brought up was blockchain, which is which is going gangbusters in our industry right now. There's a QSO, a company called CU Ledger that is based on distributed ledger technology and self-sovereign ID, digital ID, that type of stuff. So they're really getting going right now. And you were talking about that. I went, oh my gosh, this is stuff that we can really leverage right now. And you talked about how this could replace, what, title insurance? And there's all sorts of things that blockchain could help or hinder in our industry. So
there's a few different things there. So the blockchain is the technology of blockchain combines with the technology of encryption,
mm-hmm.
right? And encryption is great today and it's quite secure, but there is a very real possibility if quantum computing really gets any kind of traction. There's elements to quantum computing that make, there's a particular equation that can decrypt encryption and quantum computing is uniquely well suited.
Kind of usurp that?
We're not there yet.
Right.
But it's possible maybe in 5 years that could come in and end up being a problem. But the blockchain piece is interesting because, you know, like let's take big data for one and blockchain for another, just
mm-hmm.
to compare those two.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to do a POC, like some sort of proof of concept of a big data initiative,
mm-hmm.
that's going to cost you millions of dollars. Because we're talking about petabytes of data, parallel processing. It's a huge job,
mm-hmm.
right? Meanwhile, you can do a POC with blockchain for maybe 50 grand, right? And so it's not hard. I mean, even less. I mean, you can build something on Ethereum-based blockchain pretty easily, and now you're off to the races, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what we've seen, like the number of POCs in blockchain vastly outstrips the POCs in big data,
mm-hmm.
right? And so that was part of the really huge hype curve that came with blockchain.
Oh, yeah.
It went really high.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was being used for every possible application, but what you find out quickly is that most of these applications you're just better off with the database. Like you don't actually need the blockchain functionality. Like there's some places where it can really help,
mm-hmm.
but many of them it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. So where are the use cases that are actually gaining traction? And you mentioned them. One is supply chain management. The other one is digital identity.
Mm-hmm.
And even the title insurance effectively is a form of digital identity at that point, right? Because you're recording what it is that you own.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem at that point is who puts the data on the blockchain? Once it's on, it's secure.
Right.
But who puts it on? That becomes the weak link.
Mm-hmm.
The weak link.
Mm-hmm.
And they call it the data onboarding. where's the data onboarding of a particular blockchain? Mm-hmm. So I think that title insurance could be that group where they say, because they become the industry oracle, right? Because they're the ones putting the data on. Mm-hmm. So the idea would be, like, let's say a Chicago title, for example. I'm just making this up.
Sure.
Have not talked to a Chicago title. But they could say feasibly, okay, you just bought a house, title insurance is $2,000, or you can pay $3,000 and you get the title insurance, and we'll also put that on the blockchain so that your house is on the blockchain, mm-hmm. which is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
And also, when you sell the house, possibly you might not need title insurance, or at least less of it.
Gotcha.
Because the record's there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think for the younger generation that they want to do something cool, I would like that myself for $1,000.
Yeah.
So that's one model.
Okay.
Right? And in that case, it would be the title insurance that become the onboarders. But the other thing to keep in mind is that a blockchain, by definition, is an ecosystem play. So, like, if one company, let's say, again, Chicago is just an example, Chicago Title says, okay, we're going to do it on our own, you're better off. If you own all the nodes,
right,
then there's no security there. There's no benefit.
Right.
The benefit is if you have a node and you know, all the different title companies and maybe the banks and maybe the credit unions, mm-hmm. and multiple people, so that's the checks and balances, mm-hmm. right there. Then you've got something, you know, but then any one company no longer owns it. Like, blockchain is kind of like the anti-business model. Like, it becomes a public utility.
Yeah.
So now what the opportunity is in a branding and positioning opportunity. Because then Chicago Title could say, we started this blockchain, we support this blockchain, we're forward thinking, we're avant-garde,
right?
But at the end of the day, they don't own it. It becomes like this third-party utility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as an example, the ID 2020 is a large digital identity blockchain collaboration with Accenture and Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it was primarily for refugees, so largely Syrian refugees and some African refugees. And that could be compared to a biometric database. That could be compared to the Aadhaar program, which is a program in India, which is also a 23-point biometric database. It was an initiative of Narendra Modi. Very successful. 99% of, which is incredible in India, of 18-year-olds or older have an Aadhaar number.
Really?
But it's not on a blockchain. Right? It's on a database. So let's compare those two models.
Yeah.
Right? That the Aadhaar program has a huge amount of administrative expenses to maintain it, and it's limited because it's got the border of India. It only includes Indians.
Right. And how
ID 2020? It's I don't know.
Okay.
But it's, I mean, presumably it's okay. But
okay. Okay.
It's not a blockchain.
Right.
So on ID 2020, it is a blockchain, so you have some security advantages. There's no administrative expenses once it's created. It just exists,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's no borders, which means it could go anywhere. Now, I'm not pitting these two against each other, but metaphorically, you could run this type of a contest 1,000 times, and the blockchain version is going to win, you know, 2/3, 3/4, 80% of the time, maybe, right?
Yeah.
So so these things migrate over a period of time, and they kind of sneak in from the edges, and you never know where that battle is playing out again.
Mm-hmm.
And this time blockchain won again, and this time a database won. So it's not going to be 100%.
Right.
But more and more, we're going to see these different things creep in, and it's going to be the responsibility of credit union folks and bank people to pick the winners and start using that public utility, which they don't own, but saying, we support that, we think it's secure, mm-hmm. and now they look avant-garde because they're part of that.
Exactly.
That part
an
of
image
revolution.
Thing as well, image builder for sure. Oh my gosh, there's so many things in here, Patrick. I could go.
I know.
There's so many things. I want to talk real quick about fleet learning, kind of a network of. I found this super fascinating.
Yeah.
So can you, for those out there who may not be familiar with it, I just thought it was
what? So when Tesla announced their autonomous driving on their Tesla, there's many cars, I think 70,000, I'm not sure, but lots of cars already had the hardware to do autonomous driving. So they made this announcement, and there was one guy who had a very sharp corner on the way to his house. And on the way home that night, apparently, he took his hands off the wheel and was like, okay, let's see how it does.
Works.
And it didn't work that well, but he didn't crash. And,
right.
But anyway, it was some problems. But then he did it again the next day, and the next day, and the next day, and the next day. He kept trying it. And after 2 weeks, his car had learned how to take that corner. But it wasn't just his car. that learned to take the corner. All Teslas had learned to take that corner. And it's such an incredible concept that people need to, and I always hope that people notice. I love that you notice that, because to me it's like one of the most important things in my presentation, because that's what allows the thing to be exponential, and that's what allows, like, that's why cloud is so important, and then the network effect is the more people on the network, you have the more individual experiences which can all go up to the cloud where the true intelligence resides up there, fix the problem, and then it deploys network wide. Right. So each individual driver is benefiting from situations from that they else's. Never had themselves. I mean, that's where the future is.
I think that's just the ultimate form of efficiency. You know? So efficient. Oh. I mean, just
and it's exciting.
Oozing with efficiency. Yeah, all right. Well, I'm going to let you go because I know you got a lot of stuff to do. But
we could talk for
I know
for
there
three
are so
hours.
Many I, things in I, here, but it's so exciting.
When I present these or prepare these presentations, I'm almost like, how in the world? Like, I want to do five times more because there's so many stories,
yeah.
right?
Oh, yeah.
So you have to pick just, you know, two or three good ones and focus on those. But it is an exciting time, and I appreciate your interest.
Oh, in my gosh, you're welcome. And thank you for taking time out as well. Appreciate it. All right, Patrick.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you very much. Hey, you want to give your book a quick plug here?
Sure, yeah. I wrote this book in just last year, 2018, so it's available on Amazon. It's called Anarchy, Inc. The bottom line is there's a lot of things changing. It's exciting, but it's going to be a wild ride.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be a wild ride. So, and that's really what this is all about. We're moving to a decentralized world, and that is... It's a lot more individualistic, a lot more tribal. Like, the political discussion is likely to get worse before it gets better. It's a lot of very, and we're going into a world with multiple realities. There is no one truth. That day's over.
Okay.
There's competing realities, and each one has more than enough evidence to support that they're right and everyone else is wrong. So, because that's what happens when you have surplus information.
True.
No one can consume it all.
Yeah.
The bell curve of true right, true left, and the bell curve. Right. So if you can't consume it all, you have to pick a subset.
You have to find.
So some people pick this, some people pick that, and it just gets further and further apart as the surplus situation gets larger. Right. And so that will. We're getting more and more. So it just is driving people further apart. So there's a lot of, it's going to be a crazy ride. And the job markets is another one that's going to change a lot.
I almost went into that too as well, but that's another show.
Things can change. I appreciate it.
Patrick, thank you so much.
This.
Well
yeah,
done.
Welcome.
And we'll put it.